Random House Audiobooks presents Star Wars: The New Jedi Order, Darktide, Onslaught, by Michael A. Stackpole.
Darktide, Onslaught. Gavin Darklighter looked at his primary monitor, but nothing was popping up as a threat. The Rogue Squadron commanding officer glanced over his shoulder at his astromech droid. Catch? Give me biologicals down to the size of Minox, and anything that appears to be moving erratically. The primary console beeped, and a small box appeared around a distant object on the X-Wing's heads-up display. Gavin selected the object as a target and glanced down at its profile and image on the secondary monitor. At a quick glance, it could have been mistaken for an asteroid and dismissed easily. But to Gavin, it looked far too symmetrical. The rear had a couple of recesses in it that could have hidden propulsion exhaust units, and a couple more up front that could house weapons. Gavin triggered a quick blast and waited for the asteroid to explode. But that didn't happen. As the quad burst neared the target, the bolts all whirled into an invisible vortex and vanished into a pinpoint of white light. The asteroid jetted forward, swinging around to bring its nose to bear on the X-Wing. Gavin started to roll port and dive, but something shook his ship. In a heartbeat, Catch started screeching, and the X-Wing's forward shields collapsed. Something dully red blossomed on the asteroid's nose, then shot toward the X-Wing. It hit hard and splattered a bit. Then what appeared to be molten rock started melting through the fighter's metal flesh. Warning sirens blared, drowning out Catch's panicky tones. Bright red damage flags began to scroll up over the primary monitor, all but one of them moving too fast for Gavin to read. The one he could see reported a premature ignition of a proton torpedo's engine, which lit up the whole port magazine and tore the X-Wing apart. Stunned, Gavin sat back in his seat as the screens went black and the simulator's cockpit hatch cracked open. He glanced at his chronometer and shook his head.
Catch, what was that thing?
A human orderly appeared at the edge of the cockpit.
Colonel Darklighter, Admiral Creefay sends his compliments.
Gavin blinked.
His compliments? I lasted less than half a minute.
Yes, Colonel, very true. The Admiral said he would meet you in your office and explain why you are to be congratulated on doing so well.
Admiral Treyas Creefay closed the door to Gavin's office, then unceremoniously plopped himself down on the couch. Gavin moved from behind his desk to one of the two chairs making up the conversation nook in his office.
It killed me in 25 seconds. Do we know what it was?
The Bothan Admiral raked claws back through his pale mane.
Leo Ganasolo recently spoke to the Senate and tried to warn them about an unknown alien force that had attacked several worlds on the rim out beyond Dantooine. She didn't get a very warm reception. She left data behind from which the simulation was created.
Gavin sat back in his chair. You're telling me that thing is a starfighter being used by folks who attacked the Outer Rim?
Yes. Technically, it's called a coral skipper by the species that created it. They grow them out of something called Yorick coral. I've designated them skips for our purposes.
And the princess brought this to the Senate's attention and they didn't listen? Treyas shook his head.
Opposing forces have been gathering power to fight over the whole Jedi question. It's heated up because of the charge that a Jedi's rash action sparked the Ramamul conflict. A number of powerful senators saw the princess's story as an attempt to divert their attention.
Gavin nodded. Is there any evidence that the invaders are still coming in?
Actually, no. But logic suggests that the expenditure of resources needed to travel from galaxy to galaxy necessitates gaining a foothold through which those resources can be replenished. The Bothan smiled. If you spend enough credits to get somewhere, you usually plan to stay for a while.
Right. Gavin rubbed a hand over his mouth. These skips, how did they take my shields down?
We need more research to be certain, but it appears that they have creatures called Dovan Basals that are part of the fighter itself. They manipulate gravity, which is how they were able to soak off your shots and rip down your shields. We think that cycling more lower power shots through the lasers will force the skip to expend a lot of energy creating those black hole shields. As long as it's worried about catching shots, its maneuvering ability is degraded. These strategies are hypothetical, however, and can really only be tested in combat.
I see. Gavin pressed his hands together.
I can have the squadron simming against these things. Then you can point us at them in the rim, and we'll try it.
I knew you'd be game for that, which I appreciate.
The Bothan sighed.
We have another problem, though. Because of the way Princess Leia was dismissed by the Senate, it's political suicide to act as if her report has any credence to it.
Well, yeah, but isn't it real suicide to assume it doesn't?
Gavin glanced down at the floor, and then back up into Traist's violet eyes. Given that your cousin, Boris Kfelia, now leads the New Republic, this can't be easy for you. But to ignore...
Traist held up a hand to forestall Gavin's comment.
Colonel, I would hope you've seen enough of me through the years to know that I'm not one to follow exactly what my superiors think I should be doing.
Traist opened his hands.
I would like to use Rogue Squadron out on the rim. I hope, for all our sakes, we won't encounter any Yuuzhong Vong. But if we do, we'll take them apart and give the Senate evidence it will never be able to dismiss.
Leia turned from her packed luggage and glanced at the suite's doorway as C-3PO opened the door and admitted Ilagos Akla. The Kamasi senator gave her a quick smile. She sighed.
I thought I'd be ready by now, but I'm just finishing my packing.
Please, take your time.
Ilagos shrugged. Leia waved him into the two-level suite's central chamber, and the Kamasi settled himself into one of the chairs, angled toward the viewport that looked out over Coruscant's cityscape. Leia stuffed a small holocube into a bag and started closing the fasteners. She looked up in time to see her husband, Han, there in the doorway. She heard Ilagos rise from his chair.
Captain Solo.
Han staggered forward and nearly fell down the stairs. With a grunt, he flopped down into one of the chairs opposite Ilagos. In the viewport's light, the rainbow of stains on Han's once white tunic was evident. He ran a hand over a beard stubble, flashing dirty fingernails as he did so. I have a question for you, Ilagos.
If I can be of service.
I understand you, Kamasi, have strong memories.
Leia extended a hand toward Ilagos. Forgive me, Ilagos. I learned about that from Luke, and I thought my husband... The Kamasi shook his head.
I have no doubt you are all to be trusted with this information. We are able, among our kind and with certain Jedi, to transfer strong, powerful memories called Memni.
Yeah. The strong ones do stick around.
Han fell silent for a moment, then fixed Ilagos with a hard stare.
So what I want to know is this. How do you get rid of them?
The Kamasi lifted his chin.
We cannot get rid of them, Captain Solo. By sharing them, we share the burden of them, but we can never be rid of them.
Han curled forward in the chair, grinding the heels of his hands against his eyes.
I can't stop seeing him die. There he was, standing there. He'd saved my son. He'd saved Anakin. He tossed him up into my arms. Then when I saw him again, a gust of wind knocked him down and collapsed a building on top of him. But he got up. He was bloody and torn up, but he got up again. He raised his arms toward me, so I could save him the way he'd saved Anakin.
Han's voice squeaked to silence. His larynx bobbed up and down.
I saw him, standing there, as the moon hit Cernpedal. The air just combusted. The light turned him black, just a silhouette. Then it ate into him. I saw his bones. They turned black, too. Then white. So white I couldn't watch. Then nothing.
Han swiped at his nose with a hand.
My best friend. My only true friend. And I let him die. How am I supposed to live with that? How do I get that out of my head? Tell me.
Chewie was my friend. He counted on me. And I failed him. Chewie died hating me. I abandoned him. I left him there to die.
No, Han. No.
Leia dropped to her knees beside Han's chair and clutched his left forearm.
You can't believe that. Regardless of what you believe, Captain Solo, Chewbacca did not share that view.
What? How can you know what he was thinking?
The same way you will.
The Kamasi blinked his violet eyes.
He saved your son. In Chewbacca's eyes, Anakin saved you by taking the Millennium Falcon. Yet one more time, Chewbacca saved you. This time, through your son. You don't know that now, but you will come to see that it is the truth. When you relive this memory, think about that. As noble a hero as Chewbacca was, he could not have had anything but joy at knowing you survived. To think anything less demeans him.
Han shot to his feet, pitching the chair over backward. How dare you? How dare you come into my home and tell me I'm demeaning my friend? What gives you the right?
Elago slowly rose and spread open hands before him.
I apologize for any offense, Captain Solo. I have intruded on your grief. It was unthinkable.
He bowed to Leia.
My apologies to you as well. I shall leave you.
Don't bother.
Han stalked forward between them, then headed toward the door.
3PO, find out from Coruscant's constabulary which tapcalfs lead the list for incident reports. Comlink me the list.
Leia got up.
Han, don't go. I'm going to be leaving soon.
I know. Off to save the galaxy again. That's my Leia.
He didn't turn to face her, just hunched his shoulders.
I hope you have better luck. I failed to save even one.
The suite's closing door eclipsed Han Solo's back. C-3PO, his head cocked, looked at Leia.
Mistress, what do I do?
Leia closed her eyes and sighed.
Get the list. Give it to him.
Maybe call Wedge or any of the other retired rogues. Hobby or Jansen or someone ought to be at loose ends and could keep an eye on him.
And when he comes back, take good care of him.
She felt a hand on her shoulder.
Leia, I can head out to the rim on my own to investigate the alien invasion. You can stay here to care for your husband. I can report to you.
She opened her eyes, then covered Elagos's hand with her own.
No,
Elagos. I want to stay. All of me wants to stay. But I have to go. Others can't, so it is up to us to rescue those under attack.
Han can take care of himself.
He'll have to.
Luke Skywalker stood at the edge of the grove, allowing Yavin 4's light breeze to tease and snap the corner of the dark cloak that shrouded him. In the circular opening of the grove stood a number of gray plinths, each serving as a memorial for fallen Jedi and students. The last was Miko Reglia.
We're not going to be putting one of those memorials there for Mara, you know.
Luke raised his head and felt the hint of a smile touch his lips. He glanced back at the dark-haired Jedi Knight behind him.
That isn't what I was thinking, Corrin. Corrin Horn shrugged.
Maybe not at the moment, but it had to be lurking there somewhere.
Pops for me every time I look at the place, since I heard how ill she is.
Anyway, I thought you'd want to know. They're all here. The last shuttle came in 10 minutes ago.
Kip Duran was on it. His arrival excited a lot of the younger Jedi Knights and apprentices.
The Corellian hesitated, then bowed his head.
What worries me is that Kip is clearly aware of the political storms his actions are creating, but he just ignores them. The problem has really become acute because of Skidder's actions at Ramamool.
I know.
This is the primary reason I recalled everyone here. Luke noticed a smirk tug at the corner of Corin's mouth. And, yes, I know that issuing a recall lets everyone know who is in charge. Luke turned from the grove and waved a hand toward the great temple. Shall we? Corin nodded and started off, with Luke catching up easily enough. He watched Corin for a moment, then smiled. When Corin had first come to the academy to train as a Jedi to save his wife, Mirex Terek, he'd been willful and arrogant. While it wasn't until the peace with the Empire some 6 years earlier that Corin resigned from Rogue Squadron to become a full-time Jedi, the Jedi philosophy and demands had become fully integrated into his life. Oddly enough, while Corin had let go of his arrogance, Kip and the others let their pride in being Jedi venture dangerously into the area of arrogance. Luke Skywalker strode into Yavin 4's great temple and felt his heart swell in his chest. The members of the Jedi Academy had been arrayed in ranks in the grand audience chamber. He paced down the red carpet that split the hall lengthwise and slowly mounted the steps to the dais at the far end. If those on the left side are aligned with Kip Duran and his proactive view of the Order, then the division of the Order is more marked than I thought. The left side of the room held nearly two-thirds of the Jedi. Luke made himself smile. I am glad to see you all here. He held a hand out, palm down. We face two very grave problems. Either of them could destroy the Jedi. Together, they most certainly will, unless we put aside any differences and work together. Kip, perhaps you would share what you know of the alien invaders known as the Yuuzhang Vong. The request clearly surprised the dark-haired Jedi. As you wish it, my master. Kip had come to the Jedi Academy as a gangling youth of 16. At 32, he had grown into a strong, slender man with sharp features and angry eyes. My squadron and I were ambushed by these Yuuzhang Vong. They fly living ships made of something like coral. The ships can collapse the shields on an X-wing or cause laser shots to be sucked into a small black hole. We can kill them, of course, but it is not easy. They wiped out my squadron, capturing and later killing my apprentice, Miko. I barely escaped with my life. Luke leaned forward. You said you were ambushed by the Yuuzhang Vong. How is it that a Jedi Knight is ambushed? The younger man frowned. Their fighters looked like rocks, pieces of asteroids, really. Kip's voice trailed off as his face closed. I registered no hostile intent from them. I didn't even sense them through the Force. His admission started conversation buzzing through the room. Luke let it go, permitting surprise and anxiety to replace the sense of impending confrontation before he spoke. Yes, exactly. I engaged the Yuuzhang Vong as well and could not sense them in the Force. They seemed disconnected or shielded from it. Luke folded his arms across his chest. The New Republic is of the opinion that the Yuuzhang Vong threat has been eliminated. But I believe that all we've dealt with so far is a strong probe. They will continue to come. Kip snorted. Once again, the New Republic remains blind to a threat, leaving us to deal with it. Corin Horn narrowed his eyes. But this is a threat we may not be able to handle without help from the New Republic. If we say we can handle the problem, and they're right that none exists, then we look to be fools. If it does exist and we fail, that could be the end of the Order. Luke raised a hand to stop the discussion. Our situation is this. We've got a foe who is able to blindside us, coming forward in unknown numbers at unknown sites for reasons unknown, and a galactic government that has decided to do nothing about it. That government also does not trust us. I think, no matter which way this turns out, we will be in for a lot of blame.
Kip pointed a hand toward Luke.
If we will be blamed for what happens, I would rather be blamed for being zealous in attacking this problem than timid in waiting for developments.
Luke closed his eyes for a moment and studied the danger in Kip's comment. The Jedi Knights were always meant to be defenders of peace. But Kip encouraged offensive action, proactive and preemptive strikes. Luke opened his eyes again, then took a step down toward the crowd of Jedi before him. It is premature to speak of any attacking of the Yuuzhan Vong. Our job right now is to prepare for the worst, and to learn as much about them as we can. Only then can we plan what we will do. He looked around at the Jedi Knights arrayed there. Over the next week or so, I will give you assignments. I will be sending you into dangers I cannot even guess at knowing. I hope all of you will return unhurt, but I know that will not happen. While the outside world may be divided about us, we cannot afford to be divided against ourselves. If we do not stand together, we will be torn apart, and with us will fall our galaxy. Luke looked up and smiled as his two nephews, escorted by Corin Horn, entered the briefing room. Did you see your sister off on the shuttle?
She's on her way.
Jason, the older one, glanced around the room.
But she wishes she had a better assignment.
I'm sure she does. Luke watched Jason for a moment. Right now, I need her picking up Danny Kui at Kominor, then joining your mother and Senator Akla on their fact-finding mission to the Rim. Danny may be helpful on their mission, since she has already survived an attack and capture by the Yuuzhan Vong. Anakin, the younger nephew, said, If Danny had just stayed with our mother on Coruscant, she could have come out with her and not needed Jaina. Jason frowned. Jaina's going to help Danny work on her force skills. That's why she's going. They'll be traveling for a few days with nothing else to do, and Jaina's a good teacher. Luke nodded.
What is it you have for us to do? Pretty much everyone else has their assignments already.
Anakin, I'm going to have you accompany Mara to Dantooine.
Huh? What?
Anakin's brows furrowed, and just for a second Luke caught an angry expression that meant trouble whenever he'd seen it on Han Solo's face.
But I thought I'd be out doing something.
The anger that had flashed over his face drained away with his next words.
I understand.
Luke arched an eyebrow at him. And what is it you understand?
You don't trust me, because I killed Chewbacca.
The mournful tone of the boy's voice sent a shiver down Luke's spine. There is something you must understand, Anakin. First and foremost, you did not kill Chewbacca. Luke walked over to his nephew and tipped the boy's face up until their gazes met. The Yuuzhan Vong caused Cernpadal's moon to come crashing down into the planet. Not you. For you to accept blame for Chewbacca's death absolves them of his murder and the murder of all those you couldn't save. You can't do that. Anakin swallowed hard.
That sounds logical when you say it. But in my heart, what I feel, what I see in my father's eyes...
Luke lowered his face to a level with Anakin's. Don't be reading something into your father's eyes that isn't there. He's a good man, with a good heart. He'd never blame you for Chewie's death. The Jedi Master straightened up again. Regardless of misunderstanding, I don't know how you can think I don't trust you. I am very specifically entrusting to you my wife, the person I hold most dear. The boy frowned.
Are you sure it's not the other way around?
Luke put his hands on Anakin's shoulders. Mara needs some time to get her illness under control. Dantooine is a world teeming with life, so it's full of the Force. I want her there to be able to recover. And I want you with her to help her out. If you'll accept this mission, I'll be very grateful. Anakin hesitated for a moment, then nodded.
Thanks for trusting me. I'll take good care of her, Uncle Luke. I really will.
We'll come back ready to do whatever is needed to beat the Yuuzhan Vong. I'm sure of it. Luke nodded to his nephew and watched him leave the room, then turned his attention to Jason. Well,
I suppose this conversation has been coming for a while, hasn't it?
Probably.
Jason shrugged. Luke looked over at his nephew. What have you been thinking? The youth sighed.
If this sounds harsh, I don't mean it to be, but I've come to realize something pretty fundamental about the Jedi Order. You're following the teaching of your masters, Uncle Luke, but they had to instruct you in those things you needed to defeat the Empire. You were shaped as a weapon by Jedi masters who were part of a tradition that had developed into peacekeepers. I get the feeling, though, that's not how the Jedi began. I think the Jedi philosophy started as something that strengthened people within. But a lot of those teachings were lost along the way. I mean, I feel the need for something inside. With anguish on his face, Jason looked at his uncle. I'm not sure being a Jedi Knight is my calling in life. I'd really prefer it if you gave me no assignment at all. Luke shifted his shoulders involuntarily as a twitch shot up his spine.
Wow, I'd not expected that.
Jason glanced at the floor.
I'm sorry I disappointed you. Luke shook his head. No, it's not that.
Then you'll let me seek the answers I need?
No.
Luke held his hands up quickly. I mean, yes, you'll be able to seek for your answers, but not as a replacement for an assignment. I do understand what you're saying, and I promise you that if you decide that your path is one of introspection, I won't stand in your way. But for you to go off now means you'd be putting your life ahead of that of others, and that's not good. I've saved the most dangerous mission in all this for myself, and I want you with me. We're taking R2 and going to Belkaden, where Danny was stationed, to see what the Yuuzhong Vong agent was trying to create there. Because you've dealt with the aliens before, I really need you with me. Jason's face closed for a second, then he nodded, but stiffly.
I'll go along with you for now, but I have such mixed feelings. I'm afraid I'll be no help to anyone.
Fair enough. Luke turned to Corin. The Corellian had been waiting patiently. Yours is the second most dangerous mission. Out on the rim, there's a system designated MZ-3391 by Imperial surveyors. The Empire had made the planet off-limits to everyone, for reasons that are unclear.
You think the Yuuzhong Vong are there?
I don't know.
Luke shrugged.
The University of Agamar uncovered records concerning the fifth world there, which they've named Bimul, after the Imperial survey team leader. About 3 months ago, they sent a Xeno archaeological survey team out as part of a four-credit course. No one has heard from them. We were sent word by the university administrators, who thought if we had Jedi in the area, we could swing by and make sure everything was all right.
Corin nodded. Okay.
I want you to take Ganna Rissodi with you. He'll be your partner. The Jedi frowned. If it's any consolation, Corin, Ganner was no more in favor of this pairing than you were. Luke gave his friend a simple smile. Look, if there is nothing going on out there, then the mission should be simple. You get in, you locate the university's people, and evacuate them.
Ganner could do that by himself.
He could, but if the Yuuzhong Vong are there, I think he'd be likely to launch into them, and that would leave the folks he came to save in a very bad position. You're in charge, and he will obey you, albeit rather reluctantly.
Jason, who'd been quietly listening, smiled at the Corellian.
Besides, Corin, you have to admit that lacking telekinetic abilities does put you at a bit of a disadvantage. Sure, I can't move a rock with my mind, but boy, can I make that rock think it's been moved.
Corin sighed.
Ganner is pretty good with TK. Makes sense to include him. And things could have been worse. You could have paired me up with Kip.
The Jedi Master's smile widened.
This is also a chance, Corin, to show Ganner that Kip's approach to the Force isn't the only way to do things.
Got it, Corin returned the smile.
Well, may the Force be with all of us, I guess.
Through the doorway to the bedroom they shared, Luke Skywalker caught a glimpse of his wife reclining on the bed. Mara's chest rose and fell regularly and gently. Peacefully, really, prompting him to realize how little peace they had known in their life together. He entered the room quietly, hoping not to disturb her, but her eyes flickered open. He seated himself at Mara's feet.
How are you?
One corner of her mouth tucked itself into a smirk.
You're the Jedi Master, you tell me.
Luke reached out through the Force and quickly encountered the defenses she'd set up. It felt as if she'd wrapped herself in thorns. Finally, beyond the wrappings and past an ocean of images, hopes, and fears, he reached Mara's core. When he experienced her through the Force this way, she always appeared to him to be white-hot, flaring brilliantly. She was the most vibrant and alive person he'd ever known. Something made all that much more remarkable, since the Emperor would have tried to dampen down her vitality while she was in his service. The illness she had contracted had sapped some of her strength, but her resilience kept it at bay. He could feel the Force flowing through her, constantly rebuilding the damage done and keeping the disease beaten back. While the initial encounters with the Yuuzhan Vong had distracted her and allowed the disease to advance, she had made a major effort toward recovery. Luke thought, she is not yet whole again, but she is gaining in strength. He gave her a smile. I'd say you're doing very well, my love. Mara sat forward and reached out to stroke Luke's cheek.
I'm doing better, but not well enough.
Give it time, Mara. He kissed her on the wrist. Impatience is handmaiden to despair.
And despair is of the dark side.
Mara nodded slightly. I understand, Master Skywalker. Luke rested his chin on her knee. You don't mind having Anakin accompany you to Dantooine? I don't want you burdened with something that's really my problem.
Luke!
Mara's voice developed a little edge.
When we married, we agreed to share all of the problems as well as the joys.
She closed her eyes for a moment.
I like Anakin.
She glanced up at Luke. Of course, I imagine he's not thrilled at being saddled with a sick old lady heading to a backwater world for a rest cure. Actually, he accepted the assignment very willingly. Mara's eyes flashed.
I caught that burst of caution from you, Luke.
What is it?
I clearly need to work on control more.
He sighed. Dantooine is fairly well rimward. It could be in the Yuuzhan Vong invasion corridor, if there is one. Sending you and Anakin out there all alone...
Mara sat up. ...is probably the best shot you have at getting some scouting done so you can assess the scope of the invasion.
I can't fault your logic, but I don't like the idea of having you on the front line.
But Dantooine isn't a serious military target.
Mara crooked a finger, beckoning Luke closer.
And I know... Your concern for me and for all the other Jedi heading out is simply a mechanism you use to avoid thinking about the dangers you will face. After all, we are going to worlds where the Yuuzhan Vong might appear. You are going to a world where we already know they've been.
Leia Organa Solo smiled cautiously at Danny Kui and Jaina. The two of them had arrived at the temporary office she'd been given by the Agamarian Council, with enough time to spare so she could inspect their clothes. Leia circled a finger, prompting a sigh from Jaina, but both young women turned around to show off their attire. Leia glanced at Elagos.
I think they will do. Quite presentable indeed.
An Agamarian appeared in the doorway to the office. If you are ready, the Council will hear you now.
Danny looked startled.
Elagos crossed to her and settled his hands on her shoulders.
Just remember, Danny, you are reporting to them what you know. That you can do easily.
Leia let Elagos lead with Danny in his wake. She slipped in beside her daughter. Though Leia had seen holographs of the chamber, they had failed to convey its breathtaking majesty. An oceanic motif dominated everything, with the rows at which council delegates sat being arrayed like waves. At the podium, which appeared to be a stone being washed at the base by clashing waves, a tall, slender woman stood and turned toward Leia and her party. She beckoned Leia forward.
The council is prepared,
for your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Leia approached the podium. She nodded solemnly to the men and women seated before her.
I thank you all for allowing me to address you. Before I begin, I want to identify those people I've brought with me. Elagos Akla is a Republic senator conducting a fact-finding mission here in the Outer Rim. Next to him is my daughter, Jaina, who has first-hand knowledge of the problem we face. And last is Dani Kui. She was stationed at Exgal 4, based on Belkaden, when the Yuuzhong Vong invaded and held her captive. Please, hear what Dani has to say. She waved Dani forward, and the scientist coughed into her hand before beginning. In my work at Exgal, I was involved in looking outside the galaxy, where it was supposed nothing existed. Maybe I looked outside because looking back in meant I would face crowds, and that scared me more than a little. Some good-natured chuckling greeted Danny's overture and seemed to put her more at ease. But what scares me more now is the fact that there is something from beyond the galaxy. I know the theories that have been taught that a disturbance in hyperspace makes travel outside the galaxy impossible. But that doesn't mean that someone else couldn't find a way through it, or past it, or around it. And they have. They are the Yuuzhong Vong. They are humanoid and capable of mimicking humans. Dani took a deep breath and let it out slowly. The Yuuzhong Vong are a cruel people who employ biological devices the way we use machines. Some of it may seem silly, like having starfighters grown out of coral. But the fact remains that these ships had capabilities we'd not faced before, and have no easy way to counter. Perhaps worst of all, we are unclear as to the Yuuzhong Vong motive for invading our galaxy. We don't know if they will listen to reason, if they will negotiate some sort of peace. Dani looked over at Leia and nodded, and Leia returned to the podium. As you already know, I am not here as a speaker for the New Republic government. I have no official standing with the New Republic. I went to Coruscant to ask for help for Dubrillion and other Rim worlds that will bear the brunt of this onslaught. I was sent away. So I have come here with my daughter and friends to alert you to the threat and to ask your help in dealing with it. The Agamarian history of service to the New Republic is well known. And once again, the New Republic is relying upon you. I know I am asking a lot of you. I know you will do what you can, and even more than that. In the name of the countless people who share the Rim with you, I thank you. We will be heading deeper into the Rim, back toward Dubrillion, to face the Yuuzhong Vong. Knowing that you, the people of Agamar, are supporting us, will brighten the darkest hour and lighten the heaviest load. Leia took a single step back from the podium, then lifted her chin and clasped her hands behind her back. Here and there, starting at the back of the room, but quickly moving to the front, council members stood and began to applaud. Currents of sympathy and pride flowed through the chamber, swirling around her. The freighter Dalliance reverted from hyperspace smoothly and began a long arc in toward Bimiel. Corrin Horn liked how easily the freighter handled. It was nothing like an X-Wing, but it didn't feel as if he was driving a planetoid either. Estimated time of arrival is 30 minutes. Ganner barely grunted an acknowledgement of Corrin's comment. He stared intently at a holographically projected data window showing the image of a communications relay satellite that appeared to Corrin to have lost its antenna array. That satellite is damaged. Messages aren't going to get out. Ganner frowned. And before you ask, no indications if the damage was caused by some coral skipper's plasma blast or just a micrometeorite hitting the antenna. Corrin took Ganner's cautionary comment in stride. I know, not all trouble can or should be attributed to the Yuuzhong Vong. We don't know if they are here or not. Our mission is to find the academics and get them out. Simple.
Unless we make it complicated. Corin glanced at the forward viewport. I'll take the ship in and try to land as close to their camp as is prudent. Corin dialed the inertial compensator down to 90% just to give him a better feel for how the Dalliance flew. The fact that the turbulence made Gamma a bit gray also worked for Corin. The trip had taken a few days, and his relationship with Ganner had been cordial. Even so, it was readily apparent to Corin that Ganner wasn't going to back away from what he saw as the right method for projecting a powerful Jedi image. And Corin, on the other hand, wasn't going to embrace using fear as a tool to coerce cooperation from people. Corin flicked a switch, lowering the freighter's landing gear. Wind-whipped sand hissed a tan curtain over the viewport. Looks like we've sunk into the sand, so we're not going out through the landing ramp. Corin pointed a finger up toward the ceiling. Topside hatch. Ganner nodded and handed Corin a pair of goggles and a rebreather that had a comlink built into it. There are sensor readings to the west, about 100 meters off, probably their camp. Corin shoved up on the round hatch, leapt out from the freighter, and landed in a crouch. He sank to ankles and wrists in a trough between two little sand dunes. Rising up a bit, he started walking toward the university camp. He looked back at Ganner and waved him forward. Move through the troughs. Slow going, but it's going. A couple of rocky outcroppings defined the western edge of the camp. Below them were scraps of fabric that had once been part of tents. Reaching out through the force, Corin searched for life beneath the sand. He found insects and small mammals, with many of the latter, huddled together deep in a crevasse in the rocks. He looked at Ganner. Aside from you, I get nothing very big. Same here. The small creatures are schwappy. The imp survey team found them fairly common. The report says they're herbivores and indicates they grazed on the abundant vegetation. They've overgrazed it, then, very badly. Corin climbed up on one of the rocks. There is a much larger rock formation to the northwest, maybe half a kilometer off. The openings in it could lead to caves. Corin climbed down and started off toward the northwest. As he made his way toward the rocks, he relied on the force to tell him about his surroundings. He didn't sense many of the Schwappi, and those he did encounter seemed paralyzed with fear, trembling in deep burrows. And still, at the very edge of his awareness, other life forms moved and gathered. Something is moving out there. He glanced at Ganner. Feel it? Yes. Coming in along this dune line. Coming fast. Ganner pointed directly north. The sand is shifting a bit there. The thing burst from the dune. Nothing more than a gray and white blur, it shot past Corin and dived into the next dune. Its powerful flat tail snapped back and forth, then disappeared within the sand. Both men watched the sand shift in its wake. It wasn't until Ganner turned to look at him that Corin felt the stinging across his left thigh. His dusty black trousers had a neat gash slashed in them, and the pale flesh below was smeared with blood. The wound wasn't deep and didn't hurt that much, but if he'd not recoiled, the thing would have taken a huge chunk from his thigh. Ganner's eyes grew wide as he pointed at Corin's leg. Is it bad? No, but it could be. Corin turned and pointed to the south. It's coming back. Run for the rocks, now. Corin sprinted as fast as he could along the dune trough. He could feel two of the things pacing them. They'll catch us, unless... He skidded to a stop and ignited his lightsaber. As he did so, he twisted its grip, cutting in the dual phase function. His blade doubled in length and went from silver to purple. It sparked as he plunged it deep into the sand to skewer one of the things. The sand immediately boiled as the creature writhed out the last of its life. The Corellian Jedi flattened as another creature burst from the dune to his right. The creature's flight took it into the dune where its fellow was dying, and the second creature attacked the wounded one. Its jaws closed hard, cracking bones and making wet popping sounds. It inspired Corin to get up and run again without looking back.
He went over another dune and another, with Ganner pacing him slightly to the south. Some of the creatures seemed to still be following them, but a growing number broke off and oriented toward the rolling, bloody ball of corpses being worried and devoured. Two men appeared on the rocky outcropping toward which the Jedi ran. Each of them bore a blaster carbine and started scattering shots across the most direct route to the caves. More of the creatures moved away from the shots, letting Corrin and Ganner come in fast. Chests heaving, they reached the rocks. Corrin extinguished his lightsaber and bent over to catch his breath. He glanced sidelong at one of his saviors.
Thanks for the help.
The young man nodded, then raised the carbine's muzzle as an older woman emerged from the mouth of a cave. Thickly built and with dark gray hair pulled back in a tight bun, the woman had a hard look in her cobalt eyes that indicated she brooked no nonsense from those associated with her. Posting her fists on her hips, she shook her head.
Jedi. I should have known.
Ganner gave her a hard stare.
What do you mean?
She lifted her chin to indicate the dunes.
Only fools or Jedi would cross a slash-rat killing field. You've got lightsabers. That makes you Jedi.
Her eyes narrowed. Of course, that doesn't mean you're not also fools.